Elite Physique University, your source for all things physique enhancement.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to Elite Physique University. We got the whole crew back in the house, myself, Jason Theobald, Kayla over there, all happy, and special guest Ben Azadi. It's been a bit, folks. We've been busy. We've been super busy, and we've got a long episode here, so we're just going to jump right in. Ben, it's super exciting to have you on the show. We're going to get to everything about you, but Jason, I figured you're probably the perfect person to introduce Ben. You know him a little bit better than all of us, so tell us a little bit about Ben and how you got into contact with him the first time.
Actually, Ben and I spoke at the same conference 2 years ago at Hybrid Health Summit. And that's when I learned about him. And then from there, I read Keto Flex. And that gave me some more tools to use with weight loss resistance clients, just furthered my understanding of keto as a tool and as a metabolic process. And then Ben's been on the Excellence Cartel. And then we also had him speak in Nashville. And John, you were there, and we got to get to speak with Ben more. And then Ben also runs Keto Camp and his own version of how he coaches and does things. So busy guy. And I know I follow him and he's always out speaking and spreading the word. So that's awesome. It's a great guy to have on our podcast here.
Yeah. And Kayla, anything you want to add, feel free. I'll just say that Ben, the first time I got to meet you was in Nashville when we got to speak at the charity event. And I'm a very competitive guy in a good natured way. So like when we all speak, like myself and Jason and like all the other stuff we do, I like to try and I want to have the best presentation. I want to be the best speaker. You know, I try and like elevate myself because everyone's so good. And you just took your speaking to the next level. And I was like, wow, like I've really got to step up. And I appreciate things like that. That's why I try and speak at a lot of events. So when I heard you speak, not only did I learn a ton about keto, and I feel I have a pretty good knowledge base with keto. Jason, you're the same way. I really learned a lot, but I learned a lot about speaking. So, Kayla, do you remember anything specifically about the Nashville event with Ben speaking? We had a lot of speakers there, and I know you were a big part of putting that together, but what do you remember? Anything that stands out there?
I just know like that was Nashville was the very first event that I like really got to listen to Ben's presentation. I was at the Hybrid Health Summit too, but I can't remember if I just missed that one. There was a different presentation going on, but Ben like really changed my mind about keto. Like I was one of those that was very like, don't use keto kind of thing. And then I didn't realize how many like uses there was with it and different ways you could utilize it for issues and stuff. So I'm really excited to read the Keto Flex book. It's on my list to read too. I just have so many, but yeah, I'm excited to dive into this more, get to know more about keto and how to use it effectively for clients.
I think I sent you guys that one, Kayla. So you should have that already in hand.
Yep, I do. I just have a couple more ahead of it, of course, just like John said. But it's there.
I will say as we get ready to learn a little bit more about Ben, I will say most of the time people are coming to us as the experts, especially on the topics of keto and low carb dieting and insulin sensitivity and all this stuff that we've put out. It's nice for us to have an expert on the show. And, you know, we get to be a little bit selfish. And a lot of these questions actually came from us. So like, this is a nice chance for us to kind of up our game. Ben, welcome to the show. Please let everybody know a little bit more about you and what you have going on.
Thanks for that wonderful intro. I loved it. John, I appreciate you. Kayla and Jason, y'all are amazing. I love the work all of you do. So it's cool to be a part of this conversation to educate and help more people. And God knows we need it. We live in a country where 93%, unfortunately, 93% of Americans are metabolically unhealthy. And conversations like this today, the work you do, the work that I do, it's going to help put a dent in that and turn that tide around. So that is the goal, right? To educate people and not just to give them information, because we're not lacking information. We're actually drowning in information, but starving for like true wisdom. To give them that true wisdom from our clinical experience, our research, so they could actually take action on that. And that is the goal, hopefully, for those listening and watching today. You find that one, two, maybe five pieces of golden nuggets that you take massive action on. That's really what's going to separate you from just taking information, but going deep into what you have been learning. For me, you know, I started back in 2008 when I was one of those 93% that were unhealthy. I was obese, actually, 250 pounds, 34% body fat. Obviously, I was physically obese, but I was also mentally obese, and I was depressed, and I was suicidal, and I was exploring ways to end my life and end the suffering. I was crying every single day, working at a 9-to-5 job that was really uninspiring, and I had a lot of addictions to video games and drugs and food addiction. And then I got into books. You know, you mentioned Keto Flex, which is my book. And I really believe books are incredible. I mean, we get to get the knowledge and wisdom and experience of these authors that maybe have 10, 15, 20 years of research and experience, and they condense it into a book. And it takes decades of us learning that, and it condenses that into days. So I got into books in 2008, but it didn't even start with health books. It started with self-development books, Bob Proctor, Tony Robbins, Dr. Wayne Dyer. I would change my mindset first and take responsibility. It was my first step towards great change, because I was blaming everybody else except for myself. I was blaming my slow metabolism and bad genetics and enabling family members. And I'm putting all that in quotation marks for those listening, because those were just excuses and a victim mentality. But when I read the books and took ownership, that's when I started to become the victor of my destiny, and I stopped being the victim of my history. And then everything changed, right? 9 months after that, I lost all this weight. You know, I started to move my body. I started to eat healthy. I did P90X. You guys remember P90X?
I do, yeah. Yeah.
So I was actually ashamed to go to the gym. There was an LA Fitness really close to me, but I had never worked out in my life. Didn't know any movements. I didn't know what a deadlift was. And I was just ashamed to show up in a gym. That was my poor mindset back then. So for me, it was like, oh, P90X, I could work out from home. It was very convenient for me. So I did that to start, and it was a great starting point. So 9 months after, you know, taking responsibility, I lost 80 pounds. I went from 250 pounds to 170 pounds, 34% body fat to as low as 6% body fat at that time, which is a dramatic yeah. shift. And it made a big difference for my mental health. I say, yeah, it's all good to have a physical six pack. I think that's great. But what about the mental six pack, right? So what it did to carve out the mental six pack for me. And that was 16 plus years ago. Ever since then, until this day, I've been a student and a teacher, learning, unlearning, and relearning. And just like you guys do, I love the quote by Alvin Toffler, which is really relevant. He said, the illiterate of the 21st century are not those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and then relearn. So I'm constantly unlearning and relearning, and that's a part of the process. So keto is a tool, as you mentioned, Jason. I love how you stated it's a metabolic process. It's a tool. It's not the only tool. It's not a diet. It's a tool. It's a very powerful tool when you use it the right way. So I got into that niche of keto in 2018, but I started keto in 2014. And I got really clear that this is something that I wanted to bring to the masses. And that's where Keto Camp spawned as a rebranding back in 2018. And now I could say that I'm an authority in the space. I love teaching keto. I teach it very differently than most people in the keto space that are very dogmatic. As a matter of fact, I spoke at a low-carb conference, Low Carb USA, in 2019 in Boca Raton, Florida. They didn't like my message because it was all about, okay, keto is great, but should we do this forever? And they believe you should, and I believe you shouldn't. I believe it's a tool. So they wouldn't invite me back because it went against the dogma. But I think when you, and we'll get into this, but I think when you look at keto as a metabolic process, not a diet, it automatically detaches the dogma. So what I'm up to is educating that part of it and helping to put a dent in this metabolic dysfunction that we see.
I love it. I think that's the best way. That changed my mindset with keto. You know, here I've been doing this since 2007 off and on with clients and myself. And whenever I heard your presentation, you talked about that. It's a process. It's not necessarily a diet. And when you start thinking about the ketogenic process, getting into ketosis like that, you don't really label something a diet. You label it a tool. And this kind of leads into our first question. What's the most important application, different applications for using a ketogenic diet?
Great first question. Well, when we look at the state of our health in the United States, but this could be said for most first world countries, but our healthcare system is broken. It's sick care. Health insurance is broken. It's also a profit machine for big food, big pharma, big gov. We spend $4.6 trillion every year on healthcare. Okay, if that was the GDP of a country, it would be the fourth largest GDP in the world. 4.6 trillion. It obviously, it's broken. It is not working because it's looking at symptoms, not causes. And one out of every $4 on healthcare is spent on diabetes. Diabetes is a problem. And nobody's really dying from diabetes. It's rare to die from diabetes. It's what the diabetes leads to. Heart disease, cancer, amputations, kidney failures, et cetera. The first domino to fall before all of this starts happening is high glucose and insulin levels.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have insulin levels that are elevated. And this is a study called the Whitehall study. Insulin levels could be elevated for 14 years before fasting glucose and A1C changes. And at that point, the pancreas is so burnt out at producing insulin and those cells are so blunted with inflammation, boom, the blood sugars shift. You are diabetic or pre-diabetic. And then that leads to all the other problems that I spoke about. So enter keto. Keto is one of the best ways to sensitize your blood sugar levels and your insulin levels. When somebody's eating a ton of carbohydrates and they're not active, they're not burning it off, they don't have muscles like you all do, they're storing that sugar in their fat, body fat, visceral fat around their organs, their liver, their pancreas. And that leads to a lot of problems. Of course, obesity, but it leads to the insulin resistance and then the diabetes. When we look at the three macronutrients, carbohydrates, protein, and fat, it's carbohydrates that will yield you the biggest glucose and insulin response. And of course, processed carbs will give you a bigger response than whole foods carbs, but all carbs will give you a glucose and insulin response. Protein, you will get a glucose and insulin response, but it's not much. It's considered a phase two response. Then when we look at fat, there's no response with glucose and insulin with fat. Somebody could have a tablespoon of coconut oil or 2 tablespoons of butter and check their glucose and insulin before and after. There's no response. That's why keto is so powerful, because you're essentially lowering your total carbohydrate intake. And for 93% of Americans, they're essentially stuck burning sugar and they're in a keto deficiency. So they really need this tool. And it allows their bodies to lower blood sugar, lower insulin, tap into body fat. And then once that happens, the body fat, the fatty acids in our body fat that's now being used for energy is sent to the liver, and the liver starts producing ketones. And that's called ketogenesis, the birth of ketones, the creation of ketones. So that's why keto is so powerful, because so many people are in a keto deficiency. Again, it's a tool. Once you start working on your metabolism with keto, and we'll get into this, there comes a point where you could bring back carbs and you're not stuck in ketosis forever. And that's, of course, different for men versus women, and women who are menstruating versus women who are postmenopausal. But that's where keto is so powerful. And it goes beyond that. And we'll get to that. And I'll pause for a second. There's so many more benefits to keto that we could talk about. But the most important one, at least for those 93% of Americans, is to lower glucose, lower insulin, lower inflammation, so they could learn how to burn fat again.
So we've got a lot of coaches, practitioners, very physique enhancement oriented type of listeners, right? So a lot of people like myself, Jason, and Kayla. Jason, I would say probably one of the biggest things that we've ran into over the last 10 to 15 years, like fixing and learning how to fix, is insulin sensitivity, right? Like, would you say that's probably one of the first indicators of stalls and things that we're seeing in our coaches, our listeners are seeing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, it's one of the biggest for weight loss resistance too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this over time can cause cellular inflammation as well. So now you've got all these cells overheated. They're not, you know, the hormone receptors aren't working well. They're not, like Ben said, they're not switching over to fat burning. So there should be some fat burning in the flame of a carb, you know, an hour later. And these people get stuck burning sugar, and you can look at their keto mojo and it's like 0.1 low, 0.1 low. You should see 0.2s, 0.3s, 0.4s if you're really flexible. And so this is one of the biggest things that I have to use with weight loss resistance. I have to track their ketones. I have to hop in and out of keto and get them flexible again. So yeah, I think insulin sensitivity is right up there. But then it's also because of what it does to the cell over time. You get that cellular inflammation and man, you're not really moving at all. So
yeah, insulin sensitivity is such a huge topic. And that actually leads right into our next question. I move these a little bit around for a second, guys, if you're following the show notes. So the next question is, a lot of people who aren't dropping body fat in traditional carb-based dieting, have started keto on the same calories, right? They're eating a carb-based diet. They're not dropping weight, and they've started keto, but they left their calories the same. And they all of a sudden have started to drop body fat, not body weight. That happens the first week or two, but I'm talking about body fat over the course of time. And when you hear a lot of the quote unquote experts out there, even researchers, they'll say, well, that goes against the law of thermodynamics. How is that possible? If you're eating the same amount of calories, you can't drop body fat. It's a law of thermodynamics. Obviously, we've seen this happen in the trenches. Ben, can you explain just some scenarios that you've had and why this is possible, especially with the ties to insulin sensitivity?
Yeah. And I know that, you know, it's kind of blasphemy to say what I'm about to say, especially in the fitness space, but calories matter. They're not the most important thing. There are so many moving parts. I mean, Jason nailed it. Cellular inflammation is one of those big moving parts. When you have excessive cellular inflammation, I mean, you could go into a deficit, but you're not going to allow those hormones, your fat burning hormones, or even insulin, fat storing hormone, to do its job efficiently. And bad things are going to happen regardless of the caloric intake. Now, what happens in keto, most people actually do end up eating less, but they don't do it because they're trying to cut calories. They do it because they're so satiated because they're eating more protein and fat. But let's say somebody is eating, just to make it simple, 3,500 calories of a standard American diet, and they switch over to keto, but they consume the same amount of calories, 3,500, but it's coming from clean fats and protein and their carbs are low. There's no change in their total caloric intake. It's still at 3,500, but the person now who switched to keto will lose weight. And you ask the question, why? Well, because now the hormones are actually doing a better job getting into the cell because the cell inflammation is getting lowered because of the ketones. The ketones are a really powerful way to lower your cell inflammation. It raises glutathione in the cell and amazing things happen, but you could keep the calories the same. So I think when we are focused on calories, and I was one of them. I mean, you guys know another taboo word. I used to own a CrossFit gym, another taboo word in your space. I used to own a CrossFit gym. And so many people are fixated on calories in versus calories out. And when I was talking about keto and fasting back in 2014 at my gym, nobody really wanted to hear that message. But you guys know that it's so much more than calories. It's about how those hormones are functioning. It's about what happens after you eat the calories, not necessarily just looking at the calories. It's a huge distraction. Because you could chase calories all you want, and you will lose weight if you go into a caloric deficit. That is true. But what happens if you stay there long term? Well, then your metabolism matches the caloric intake, the energy coming in, and then it slows down and slows down. And eventually, you have a slowed metabolism versus a slowed metabolism. And a perfect example is the Biggest Loser TV show that we had here many years ago. We had all these morbidly obese contestants who went on an extreme regimen of exercise and caloric being in a caloric deficit. And they all lost weight because you will lose weight when you go into a caloric deficit and increase your caloric needs by exercising. But then they all gain the weight back. And that's why there's never a Biggest Loser reunion show, because they gain the weight back and they destroyed the metabolism. So there's ways to work around that. Of course, with refeed days, even with keto, the keto flex days, these are ways to kind of remind the metabolism that it's not starving, no need to dysfunction, no need to become inefficient. Let's switch fuel sources. But keto helps because of what it's doing at the hormone level. It's not just about calories. It's more so about hormones and cell metabolism. That, I believe, should be the main focus versus calories, because when you focus on hormones and inflammation, especially cell inflammation, the calories take care of itself. The person's going to be less hungry. They're going to produce more amounts of leptin, which is the hormone that signals to your brain you're full, put down the fork. And it's going to produce less ghrelin, which is the hormone that tells you to pick up the fork. Just by getting into ketosis, just by eating more protein and fat, all these changes start to occur. When I was at the Jeff's event with you guys in Nashville at the Iron House gym, I gave the analogy of Warren Buffett and asking Warren Buffett, who's one of the richest men on earth, like, Warren, how did you get so rich? I want to become a billionaire like you. And if he would reply to me, well, just spend less than you earn, and then he would just move on, I would think, man, he really didn't care about my question, because yeah, that makes sense, Warren, but what is the solution? It's the same thing with telling our clients and our patients, just eat less and move more. Makes sense, but like, what's the, how do you do this? Like, what's the solution? So I have noticed when we focus on inflammation and hormones, everything else takes care of itself.
I do want to tell our listeners, back in the archive, I believe it was episode 10, we did a huge deep dive on how to improve insulin sensitivity. So if you're really interested in that topic, you can go back and look. It's episode 10 back in the archives. Really good question here. This is our next one. If someone has really high cortisol, are you okay going and putting them right into a ketogenic diet, or do you first address cortisol issues and then go into a ketogenic state?
That's a really good question. It's a tricky one, right? There's a lot of things at play there. I would have them do a Dutch test first and foremost to see what's going on with their adrenal gland. So it's a 24-hour urine test to see their 24-hour diurnal pattern or circadian rhythm. And there's some things you could fine-tune looking at that. Like if they have low cortisol 24/7, then they would probably go slowly, tiptoe their way into ketosis by doing more low carb versus keto right off the bat. And low carb just means 100 grams, 150 grams of total carbs, not low enough to get into ketosis, but low enough to create some positive changes. Work on some adrenal support, some ways to boost their parasympathetic nervous system, and then shift them into full ketosis, which is less than 50 total grams of carbs, when I feel like they're ready. And of course, that's going to be different for everybody. Now, if somebody has a Dutch test and their 24-hour rhythm shows that they have low cortisol maybe in the morning and high cortisol at night, which is usually what I see on these Dutch tests, then we could shift them right into ketosis, but we could do some things at night to taper down the cortisol. Like phosphatidylserine is a supplement that you could take at night that calms the person. Practicing gratitude, easiest way to calm that person. And then there's some things they can do in the morning to raise that low cortisol, which simply means like going outside and getting sunlight, or going doing some movement if they feel up for it, doing a workout in the morning when that cortisol is low. But they could still do that while being in ketosis. So it'll vary to the degree on how severe their adrenal glands have been dysfunctioning and how long. Now, with ketosis, it is a stress to the body. And that's why there are some variables here. When the body is in ketosis, it's a stress. But we all know that stress is not bad unless you're not adapting to it. So with like fasting, a lot of people over the years, as fasting has gotten more popular and more popular, I see people talk about fasting being too stressful for the body, especially for women. They should not do it. It's too stressful. To me, that's like the same thing as saying women should not exercise because it's too stressful for the body, or men should not exercise because it's too stressful to the body. Is it the exercise that's too stressful, or is it the fact that they're doing too much and not adapting to the stress? It's the latter, right? So keto is great. It's a great stress because when the body is in ketosis, it's signaling to the innate intelligence, hey, we're going through tough times. There's not carbohydrates available. We're going through a scarcity environment here with no carbs or low carbs. We're going through a famine, and all these signals are sent. And what happens is the mitochondria now start to get upregulated, and the mitochondria start reproducing and reproducing. It goes through this mitochondrial biogenesis. So that's why somebody in ketosis is producing 400% more energy from ATP than somebody burning sugar, because of what it's doing to stress the mitochondria and create more mitochondria. Now, that's a benefit short term. You stay in ketosis long term, that's a problem. So for this person who has adrenal fatigue or cortisol issues, we could cycle them in and out of ketosis more frequently in the beginning as we work on those adrenal glands. That doesn't mean they can't do keto, but depending on how severe it is, we might want to kind of do some, some crutches. So low carb, eventually do some things for the adrenal glands and then ship them into ketosis.
Yeah.
I want to bring something up. I want you to explain vitamin G, all the benefits that come with vitamin G, because you actually just talked about it and most people missed it. And I wasn't familiar with vitamin G. And when I heard you speak about this in Nashville, I should actually share my screen, show you my notes. I actually started writing this down because, as most people know, I own a supplement company. I'm like, holy hell, what is this? Look at all these benefits to vitamin G. I'm going to have a new supplement come out because no one else has this on the market, not even New Ethics. And they're always ahead of everything when it comes to health. So explain all the benefits to vitamin G and then let our listeners know where they can find it.
Yeah, I love it. I love that you didn't give it away as well. But vitamin G is very powerful, to your point, John. Vitamin G has been shown to lower inflammation, It's been shown to lower blood sugar levels. There's some studies showing people who take vitamin G versus people who don't have lower A1C levels, which is the 3-month average of your blood sugar levels. There's studies that show those who take vitamin G versus those who don't have lower, more optimal blood pressure readings. Dr. Joe Dispenza did vitamin G workshops where he would do brain scans on his participants, and he would notice that there's an increase in the secretory IgA, which protects the immune system, and a lowering of the cortisol when you get vitamin G. He also noticed 1,200 chemical reactions take place in the brain almost instantaneously when they took vitamin G. So he noticed like dopamine, GABA, oxytocin, serotonin, all these feel-good hormones and chemicals that help to balance the nervous system. Vitamin G is not something that you could formulate, unfortunately, John, and put it into your supplements, but it is the practice of gratitude. It is feeling the gratitude, not just using it as a checklist, but feeling and experiencing that gratitude. All the studies I just referenced are legit. They are on gratitude. To some people, they hear that and they automatically say, oh, that's stupid, that's woo-woo. But when you actually practice it and do it consistently and feel the gratitude, my gosh, it's one of the best things you can do. You get a benefit right away. It's free and there's no upper limit. So an easy start for your audience would be first thing in the morning, think of 3 different things or people or relationships or whatever it is in your life that you're grateful for. 3 different things. And then spend 1 minute on each person or thing or whatever it is. So 1 minute just intentionally in that gratitude or that whatever you're grateful for, move on to the next one. And that's do that for 3 minutes. And then the next morning, choose 3 different things. There's always something to be grateful for. And a universal law states whatever you feed energy to and expands. So when you start feeding yourself gratitude and you start practicing vitamin G, there's more things to be grateful for. In other words, what you appreciate appreciates and expands and it grows. So vitamin G should be a staple in everybody's supplement plan.
For all of our listeners who are Googling vitamin G and how you can order it and get it in capsule form, he got me too. So don't worry, but it's definitely good. And we've got time for another question or two here, and then we're going to wrap up part one.
Yeah. Before you do, I have this, I can't really see it. Vitamin G. It actually says it on there. Jason, you'll see this on Friday when you come over. Yeah. So this is something my colleague made this for me. And there's some cool things on here, you know, 0% sugar fat, 100% gratitude, formulated by Ben Azadi, purity tested by Dr. Dan Pompa, 100% pure gratitude. And then it also says, hold the bottle in the hand every morning, think of something you're grateful for. And it has a lot of the benefits listed. So this is super cool. This is something I'm probably going to like develop and offer it to my community, because it's just cool to have this in your hand as a reminder for gratitude.
I love it. Let's go ahead and get into one more question here, and then we're going to move on to part two. These are a lot of fun. Here's another good one. And then I think this is one that a lot of people are going to struggle with. I've had people struggle to get into ketosis doing all the right things. What are some of the things that you can try to get them to make more ketones, to get into a ketogenic state a lot better? Because I think there's a lot of people out there, Ben, as we all know, that they try a ketogenic diet and they feel like trash. They're not getting into ketosis. What are some of the things that you spot and how to make this an easier process?
Yeah. And I would be curious, Jason, to hear your feedback on this too, because I know you put some of your clients in ketosis, and John, you too, and Kayla, I'm not sure if you're using it for your clients, but I'd like to hear your guys' feedback too. But for me, the biggest issue I see with keto in terms of people having symptoms, there's actually 2 main issues. And then I'll talk about ways to raise ketones. The first issue is they do it too dramatically. They go from whatever, 300 grams of carbs per day on the regular day, and then on day one of keto, they're under 50 grams, and it's a dramatic shift. And that is like a lot for the body to handle. Of course, you're going to lower insulin and glucose, which is great. You're going to feel lighter, look lighter, less water weight, but then your kidneys actually shed a lot of these minerals and electrolytes. It goes through this diuresis process. So there's a extreme drop in minerals and electrolytes. And that's where you hear the term keto flu comes from, where somebody feels awful that first week because they did it too dramatically. I don't recommend that dramatic shift. I recommend a gradual decrease in carbs with a gradual increase in protein and fat while you're really diligent with getting in your minerals and electrolytes. You don't have to go through that process. The second thing is most people are not able to break down the extra dietary fat they're not consuming because their liver is so congested and backed up. And the liver does so many things for us. Of course, it's a detoxification organ. It helps with fat loss. It also helps produce ketones. It also helps produce bile. Bile is needed to break down fat and also helpful for detoxification. And when your liver is sluggish and fatty and beat up because of medications and alcohol and drugs and high processed carbs, which most people have consumed, then they increase their fats. They're producing thick, sludgy bile. They can't break down the fat. They get diarrhea. They get loose stools. They feel awful. And they say, keto just didn't work for me. So if that is you, if somebody is experiencing that, there's a simple solution. And that is to increase your bitters. I always say bitter for the liver. So just eat more bitter-rich foods, arugula, ginger tea, lemons, limes, apple cider vinegar. Coffee is a bitter. Just make sure it's a clean source of coffee. And you could even consider, like, if you don't have a gallbladder, you could even consider taking ox bile supplementation before your fatty meals as your liver is adapting and adjusting. The liver is so important. I call it the soccer mom organ because it does everything for us like a soccer mom does for her family. So we want to make sure we're supporting that liver. And if you're doing all those right things and you're like 2 or 3 weeks in and you're still not producing ketones, you might just be really insulin resistant and there's a lot going on with your metabolism. You just got to give it more time. Some people need to be more restrictive with their total carbs. Instead of 50 total grams of carbs per day, some need to drop that under 20 grams to really make that shift. There are some cool things you can do to bump up ketones, which is L-carnitine supplementation is a great idea. L-carnitine just delivers fatty acids to your mitochondria, helps you feel better, produce more energy. It also helps with ketones. So about 800 milligrams of L-carnitine per day or twice per day for some people could do the trick there. Caffeine could also help bump up ketones. There's some studies that showed it helps with fatty acid utilization. So a couple cups of coffee in the morning. And then also caprylic acid, which is an MCT that you might have that in some of your products, John. If not, you probably will. But caprylic acid is one of the different types of MCTs, which is medium chain triglycerides. That has been shown in literature that bumps up the ketones the most. So you could put like a tablespoon or a powder, a scoop of a powder of MCT powder in your coffee in the morning, and that will bump up ketones. And then, of course, you know, sleep and all the fundamentals like mindset. Like if you're stressed out and not sleeping good, you will have higher levels of cortisol. Glucose falls, cortisol. And when glucose goes up, ketones go down. So always look at the fundamentals. But I'm curious with you guys, if there's anything that you do with your clients and patients that also do the trick there.
John, yeah. Do you want me to start or do you want to go?
Go ahead, man.
You know, some of the things that I've seen cause problems, I was the one who asked about the cortisol one. That's the one I see one of the biggest problems for my clients, because if we just think about it, when cortisol's up, glucagon's up. When glucagon's up, you're constantly just dumping in sugar and you're not really releasing insulin properly either. So you got this just assault on the body of sugars. And so I feel like if you throw someone in ketosis, whether cortisol's all whacked out, it's like rolling a snowball uphill. So a lot of my process is I flush the liver out first. I leave them in a feasting capacity. Get the cortisol down, and then I transition in, and it works a lot better than like if you got a coach, someone comes to them, someone's insulin resistant, they just throw them on keto. I get a lot of people come back to me, I go, well, I put them on keto and it's not working. They're not getting in. It's not helping. I'm like, did you deal with stress? Did you deal with lifestyle? Are they sleeping okay? All these things are gonna help the body transition a little help easier, I find. Also, sometimes even if I do all that and I put them in ketosis and they don't get in, I find flopping back into carbs for maybe like 2 weeks and then trying again seems to help. I don't know if that's because it further pushes cortisol down, it gives the thyroid a reset or a little bit of everything, but it seems to sometimes shock them. Our GDA Max Pro is awesome because it works like a GLP-1 in that it pushes insulin up a little bit every time you eat with the gentian flour and a few other things, the berberines and the Genoveva Silvestres and different things we have in there. And so that will clear out those sugars and help a little better. So I use that too to help them get in. If they're able to get metformin, it is something that can help. I'm not telling everyone to do it, but it can help. And lastly, if I have someone whose cortisol just doesn't seem to want to come down, but I know they really need this, I can use tirzepatide, which is a GLP-1 and a GIP. It's going to cause that glucagon to drop and allow that insulin to come out and clear out those sugars so their body can start remembering how to burn fat. That's last ditch effort though. But these are all tools that I have that I've employed to get them in and get that body reminding and remembering how to use fat as a fuel source.
Really I'll good. Say, Jason mentioned the glucose disposal agent. That's something that I'm a huge believer in as well. Ben, I'm like you, I've got a whole system. So what I do is I transition people from their normal carbohydrate intake to carbs pre and post workout. So maybe a guy would have 50 pre, 50 post for 100 for the day. And I transition them to a lower carb setup for a couple weeks to deplete, you know, their glycogen and get ready to then go from regular carbs to low carbs, then into a ketogenic diet, so they don't experience that harsh keto flu. I also like to up their rep ranges to a higher rep range to help deplete glycogen for those 2 weeks, 20 to 30 reps, which is pretty brutal if you've never done it, you know, do it to failure, and that depletes you. And then once you transition from low carbs into a ketogenic state, you can get there pretty quickly adding a GDA. And then finally, last thing, because I know we need to get part two started. If someone has the keto flu and they're experiencing that, I like to use New Ethics Essential Energy. I'm actually drinking it right now because I'm going to go train after this, and it has everything you need in it with BHB salts, a whole nine yards. So I'd like to have folks drink that, and it helps get rid of the keto flu and the keto headaches, and they can go have great workouts. There's plenty of salt and everything that you need in there. So, other than that, I think, you know, just following everything that we just said, people should be able to do it, but there's always going to be people to where they float in and out, and they're still having headaches 2, 3, 4 weeks in. Ben, I think it's probably one of those things where they're not paying attention to trace carbs and things of that nature, and they're letting their carbs kind of get out of whack. And I think that's when you saying get down to 20 total grams of carbs, that's probably going to fix that, right?
Yeah, and keeping it to total instead of net keeps things transparent too. Mm-hmm. In the beginning when I was doing keto, I would focus on net because it gives people like more wiggle room and it sounds better, like just subtract fiber from the carbs. But now I focus on total carbs. I think that's the best approach, keeps things transparent. Now, I'm not saying looking at if somebody's doing net carbs, it won't work, but I've seen looking at total carbs instead work better than net carbs.
We have got a whole bunch of good questions. Kayla is going to bring the heat. I see her typing in questions for part two. Ben, people can find you at benazzotti.com. They can check out KetoFlex at ketoflexbook.com. They can hit you up on Instagram. Your YouTube is amazing, by the way. I think we should go ahead and link your YouTube as well. But everyone, stay tuned. Part two for myself, Ben, Jason, and Kayla. We're out of here. See you guys.
See ya.
Bye.